Attention, mighty Megatron.
What is it, Soundwave?
Incoming transmission.
Well, hurry up. I'm busy playing words with friends with Perceptor. I'm almost certain he's cheating.
Transmission is a summons to an Earth function called a podcast.
No one summons Megatron.
It is related to the Earth birthday of its host named Jokam.
Why do these flesh creatures find cause to celebrate the countdown to their termination? It's only a matter of time before they disintegrate below their planet's crust, while I, Megatron, remain leader supreme for all eternity.
How shall we RSVP, mighty Megatron?
What do the Earthlings do at these birthday events?
They attempt to sing an unharmonious sonnet with the words, "Happy birthday to you."
Decline the invitation, Soundwave. I am moments away from a triple word score, and nothing can stop me now.
As you command, mighty Megatron.
The SML Podcast will return after these messages.
Your lips go through all kinds of abuse. Chapped, bitten, split, puckered, duck-shaped for MySpace. So we combined the two best things in life into a portable plastic cylinder. Smooth lips and almost fully cooked pancakes. Introducing Wet Pancakes Beeswax Lip Balm. With only the best coconut, sweet almond, avocado and saccharin oils, beeswax, and flavor. With a U. What flavor is it? We're not sure. Might be pancake. You don't know. So pick up a couple of sticks for yourself and your friends. And that creepy guy standing behind you looking over your shoulder.
Some assembly required. Not FDIC insured. Does not contain actual pancakes or Nortz. Restrictions may apply. Go for the gold. Pizza Pizza. Your mom may or may not be sponsored by the SML Podcast. Joe Cam loves you. Peace out.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
How are you doing, Joe?
I am doing good, except my webcam is not working, and I don't know why.
That's no good.
No, it is not.
Can't see your wonderful beard.
I know, and it's getting so gray because I'm getting so old.
There's no really? Getting, you just are old.
You get like Gandalf, then you get more powerful. Gandalf the gray.
Jokam the gray. Why is my webcam not working? Oh, this is fun.
Your cam has no cam. Mm.
I don't know what happened. It's just dead. Put potato up instead.
Now we're going to have to change it to Joe no cam.
It's right on the nose, and yet it works. So I'm not knocking it.
Exactly.
Like that one hurts my soul. That one really does.
You're welcome.
Well, David, you've been here before. You know how the show goes. So we'll just start. What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I got to keep that awful pun there. As you heard by the extraordinarily long intro, this is my birthday episode. Happy birthday to me. When this episode releases, I will be 45. Yay.
45.
Yeah.
You know, we don't like to use the O word here. We like to imagine that there's many.
I mean, years. The old people never like using the O word.
I am eternally youthful at seasoned. Heart.
I mean, you'll be old one day too. And if I'm old enough, I'm alive at that time, I'll let you know.
She's already old. She just doesn't know it.
Oh, that's good then. You're old. I can do that now. Great.
My back doesn't hurt when I stand up. I think I'm plenty young, unlike you.
Yeah, well, my back hurts when I'm sitting down. So,
I don't know what the...
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, I literally did like 50 burpees today. I'm doing fine.
Pernell's in shape. He works out. Pernell is...
Yes.
He's doing good.
He might be in the shape of literally all of us.
Like I'm fighting aging with a vengeance. I've got family that are like succumbing to arthritis and shit right now. Like I don't want that if I can help it. But easier said than done, as they say. So indeed, we'll see how that goes.
Also easier said than done is getting a show on the rails, but we're gonna try anyway. I'm here, Pernell's here, Aki's here, Chris will be here later on. And we have the wonderful David Ventura of Ichigo Ichie Games joining us once again. David, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fabulous. Thanks so much for having me, Joe.
Absolutely.
So, David, are you dealing with arthritis at the moment?
Thankfully, no. Thanks to the power of Ben Gay.
Here, here.
Ben Gay. That's a commercial we could use leading into the show. There we go. Ben Gay commercial.
It's the sponsorship we didn't know we had already.
Oh, man. It's them or Icy Hot. One of the two. They got to fight it out.
No. I want all the money. It's going to be both. We just have to make it so that some of us can like one more than the other. And that way, we can effectively support both brands. And it becomes what the fans want.
And Aki could sub for Preparation H because she's a pain in our ass.
Hi-oh!
David, you were here to talk about your brand new game, Tacticord. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch. What is going on in your latest project?
So Tacticord Glam Strategy is our third title, and it is an XCOM-like, where you get to live the life of being a hair metal rock star.
Well, I'm already interested. Continue.
Tell me more, exactly. So what you do is, it's a turn-based tactics title where you have a squad. Your squad happens to be your band, and you're playing in 1990. You're a high school student, Diane, and you're bullied a lot by thugs at your high school, and you're not getting any respect from your parents. The band is not really working out for you in band class. So what you do is you embark on this journey to really find people that are at your level, because you're very talented. You meet this new band called Gemini. And what you guys do is you're trying to succeed. You're trying to go out there and, you know, win a record contract and get famous while playing gigs along the way. And you're converting all of these townspeople and heavy metal fans. So instead of shooting them, you know, with like shooting aliens in the head with a gun, you're thrusting your hips around in front of old ladies, or you're doing kung fu moves in front of small school children to turn them into these big, oofy haired heavy metal fans.
Don't do it the other way around, kids. Pay attention to
exactly. They'll take you away for that.
Well, what a way to go.
I have dabbled briefly in this game, and I am really enjoying what I'm playing so far. The first thing that absolutely caught me right away is the music in this game. This, like I told you directly, that just hearing the title screen made me feel like a kid. Like that's straight up Def Leppard, just hitting my elementary school soul as I stood in the corner at the dance while everybody sat in chairs and didn't dance except parents.
Yeah, it's inspired by a lot of the really great 1980s heavy and hair metal bands. You know, we've drawn a lot of inspiration from people like Wasp and Def Leppard, Iron Maiden, the beginnings of Van Halen, and what we're trying to build is an homage to all of these foundational rock shows. The tour is big in the stadium as they were on the records, you know, so that's the whole thing for us. It's about showing off and it's performance, and there's a lot of, you know, special moves and pageantry and making like these music videos inside of the game as you're playing, converting these townspeople into your fans.
So would you say, what are some like mechanics? I'm assuming like in a lot of greats, they kind of build off of previous iterations of the games they've produced, and of which you've done three. This will be your third. Right. Are there any elements that you can say you probably brought in that would be recognizable from your previous titles?
I think the biggest thing for us is because music is such an important part of our DNA in terms of the games that we build and what we want to enable the players to be able to do is making your own songs. And that's the hallmark of all of our titles. So you are making songs in this game. And that's first for us, we have vocals now. Normally we've done instrumental games up to this point, but now you can actually choose lyrics turn by turn while you're doing these battles and guitar solos and things like that. So you're building a song piece by piece, and at the end of the level, it's creating a music video which is customized purely to your choices. So the song that comes out of the speakers is your song that you've chosen.
Oh, shoot. That's going to be a dangerous mix.
Cornell, like you're going to love this game. Dude, you have got to give this one a go. Because I know you love tactic games. I know you love rhythm games. And this just melds the two like in a beautiful, harmonious way. Sorry.
Mackie. You know, you meant to. That's fine. It was worth it. I think it was worth it. So, but yeah, it does sound like it'd be pretty much up my alley because those are both things that resonate with me. And even though I get older and my brain wants to do that thing where it wants to play less and focus more on what you already know, I have to say, that has not accounted for rhythm games and in a lot of ways, tactical games too. So I'm always seeking new goodness from those. So I think I might be on board with that. What would you say is your favorite aspect of this game compared to the other games?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's the splendor. Like it's just the pomp and kind of like going over the top. You know, with each of these games that we've made, we've tried to build spectacle. And starting out with Hexagroove the first time around, you know, we didn't have any characters and there was no story, but we tried to create the feeling of a club in terms of the lights and the VFX. And Backbeat, you know, we had the time to take the resources to add in a story and have a message there and something that players could relate to. This time, we're going even further with that. The narrative is dynamic, so you can make some choices. There's morality checks that happen throughout the game, and then based on that, there's small variations of what happens in the story. But also just the smoke and the lights and the animations, and we've really taken a step closer, I think, to creating like the feeling of being in a music video, the feeling of being on stage, you know, with David Lee Roth in front of thousands of cheering fans, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to build up that feeling and create that kind of excitement that comes with live music.
I might even say it's a little more than a feeling.
Yeah.
I had no choice.
Should we assume you were Van Halen and not Van Hagar?
Yeah, that's a controversial point, and I'm not gonna come on this podcast and fight anybody till anybody how Sammy Hagar is a wuss, even though he is. But that's
yes.
I mean, at least we're not talking about Mitch, right?
No. Yeah. No, that's another chapter we won't address tonight.
I made that joke with daylight saving when I said he had to jump ahead with the
that's
clocks.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, We're all terrible on this show. So Backbeat was more of a tactical puzzle game. Tacticord takes the tactics and shifts it into Prime Focus, and it is more tactical RPG. How do you differentiate between the two games? What would you say makes Tacticord stand out more compared to Backbeat?
I think that Backbeat, you know, is really, it's a mashup in every sense of the word. You know, it's as much of a puzzle game as it is a turn-based strategy game. You had those four threads of time that you had to synchronize, and then you have those paradoxes and causal paradoxes that you had to work around and things like that. It was a strategy game in that you had resources and you had to maximize those resources, but you know, it was also very much a puzzle game, where Tacticord is as simple as it gets in terms of the gameplay tactics wise. It really is XCOM like. We drew a lot of inspiration from XCOM and Mario Rabbids, which is a great game to get in, help new players get into the genre, I think, for turn-based tactics. I played a whole lot of tactics games in the past couple of years working on referential stuff for this title, from Tactics Ogre and Final Fantasy Tactics, Persona 5 Tactica, Tactical Breach Wizards, things like that. This game is very much, it's XCOM with a couple twists to it. Like the shared resources, we have health not for each individual character, but you have health as a band. So it's like your own band's success or failure comes down to one pool, and any damage that any individual character takes will affect that pool.
So does the band's actual like collective health and or stats come by way of leveling up the individual characters and having it kind of coalesce, or is it a band-based upgrade?
It's a band-based upgrade. So what you have is you have these two different kinds of health. They're called heat and cool, that are like the essentials of how to be a badass on stage. And melee performances in front of townspeople increases your heat. And then when you use a power move, like an AOE, something where you can convert many enemies in range, that will restore your cool, but it will consume your heat because it kind of tires you out. And that opens you up to potentially being swatted and taken down by the enemies. So you really need to work on the throttling of when do I perform individual music pieces versus when will I use these AOEs to really rack up the points and take out many people at once. But those resources do increase at certain points in the game, and your band levels up. And at the same time, the whole band gets more action points. Action points are individual for each character. And at certain points, you'll go from 2 to 3 to 4 as your heat and cool also increase from like 5 up towards of 10.
Thanks. Okay. And the funny, of course, as I'm hearing that, I couldn't help but go full circle and think, so it was icy to null the heat. What, hot?
That's right. Jesus. We're back on arthritis. We're talking about arthritis again.
Convert those. I was on it. I was like, wait a minute. We got icy hot here, but in a cool way.
Speaking of ice, it friggin' snowed here today. It was like 80 3 days ago, and today we got snow. And I'm just like, oh my God. At least it wasn't ice, because, fuck ice. I hate driving in it. I hate walking it. Just fuck ice so hard.
Yeah, I guess winter's not going
yet. Every variation of it.
At least you didn't have the freaking high force tornado winds. We had that, but
oh geez,
I had both. I hate here.
How bad was it down that way?
I woke up and there was snow everywhere in the past. Since what the hell day is it? Jesus, I can't even remember. Since
we do the shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
No, I didn't mean what day of the week. I meant what day of the month. It's the 17th. Yeah, for the past 2 days, there have been tornado watches or warnings, whichever is the lesser of the two. And this entire month, there's been like another 4 or 5 of them.
Well, don't blow away on us.
Or do, but come back with some cool stories.
I am so fucking
from
tired
the land of Oz.
You were there, and you were there, and you were there too, Joe.
Joe was there, and he didn't even come back with any cool stories. What the hell, Joe?
There was a dancing bear. He doesn't fit in the story, but he looked cool.
I care about.
On a ball, and he juggled. It was crazy. Speaking of crazy, tell us about some of the crazy characters in this game. One of the early choices sees you pick a drummer, and I have a robot as a drummer.
Right.
What kind of choices does that lead to?
So the drummer choice is something that we have kept in the playtest to kind of show you the breadth of the characters that you can have in the title and to build some excitement there. In the full version, you won't be able to choose your drummer directly, but I will say that you're... dialogue choices will affect which drummer you end up at different points in time. So it's gameplay wise, they're all the same. They're cosmetic differences.
And the robot's still accessible.
The robot's still accessible. Yes, you will get you can be the robot.
Okay.
But
a relief.
but it's tied to that kind of, I don't know if you've ever seen this, is Spinal Tap. You know, they have that gag about combusting drummers and drummers choking on their own, dying on their own vomit and things like that. So that drummers are dispensable and drummers are like throwaways. It's kind of a running gag that we use in the story.
Oh no, we lost our drummer. We'll get another one. Just go down the street and get another one.
Exactly.
So the drummer the only character that you have replaced in the band, or do the dialogue choices provide you other band members that are different?
Now, the dialogue choices in this game are limited only to the drummer, because we were thinking about like the writing and like the game balancing and things like that. So we limited ourselves just to drummer replacements this time.
Yeah.
Does the this might be kind of out of a weird question, but do the different characters potentially embody different musical styles and the by way of the moves they perform, or is it all glam across the board?
That's a good question. The music in the game changes over the course of the title, so the band kind of becomes more adroit and progresses and goes through different kinds of metal music, but that's an arc to the game progression itself. It's not related to the drummers. Though the drummers and the characters in the games are written from an inspiration of the Seven Deadly Sins, so each of the characters kind of has a vice that's associated with their personality, which is tied to their initial and potentially eventual character flaw.
Okay, I'm pretty interested in this now. I'm going to guess there's not a date yet, or is there a window of a potential release here, so I can get myself geared up for it? Or are we still like kind of prepping right now, and there's no defined period in time of release?
Yeah, I don't really have a release date, but I'm feeling like towards the end of this year or the first half of next year is probably a time when things will start to come together a lot. We've been doing playtests. We have our second playtest running right now, actually, through this week, so everyone can try it out. But
how long will it go until?
The 23rd. So we've got 23rd. Five or six days left, I think, through the weekend, if people want to try it out.
I want to suggest a potential bonus battle that is a battle of the bands with your characters from Backbeat.
That
would be interesting.
That's not a bad idea, but actually, it's you're on the right track, Brunel, because it's actually the villain in Backbeat is the protagonist in this game. This is an origin story that takes place 5 years before the events of Backbeat. So Diane, who was the one who was sabotaging and trying to bring you down in Backbeat, is the protagonist here. So you get to see her, how she got into the eventual band that you fight against in Backbeat, and like what caused her to become the person that she was then.
That is okay. Really cool. And the games are intertwined like that. Cool. I love it.
Yeah. Like gameplay wise and genre wise. Yeah, it's very different. But in terms of the world that it takes place in, which is inspired by my hometown of Frederick, Maryland, it's the same place.
I'm definitely intrigued by this, Nelly, because now I like the fact that you have a tack to beat universe is what I'm going to claim it as at this point.
Tack to beat universe, I like it. Yeah,
tack to beat universe. So now I want to see more games that lump into it, because there's room for it now. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I think I had a solid idea earlier when I suggested a German exchange band that does like late 80s industrial, like Nine Inch Nails or KMFDM.
Yeah. Yeah, I was writing lyrics for one of the songs that we're working on earlier this week. And it was like, I think we had a line about... how does it go? It's something like, spent all my money on a flying V, wanted to live like German royalty. So like as an allusion, to the Scorpions and, like idolizing that kind of metal as well.
How many songs are going to be in the game?
We will have I think that there's 13 main songs on the list at the moment, but then we have a number of others that are used in cutscenes and things like that. But one of the great things about setup with our songs is they're modular, so you can we can remix them, and you can have new songs in new levels by shuffling around the order of verses and solos and choruses and things like that. So there's a lot of replay value, I think, in terms of dropping in certain songs with other kinds of battles.
Very cool. The game is about a bassist. We have our own resident bassist on the show. Chris Taylor's joining us. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes,
we can.
Yes, thanks.
Okay, good. Yeah, they're good. I fixed my did my audio interface, so that works now.
Yay!
So I can play bass again while record it for the internet.
You just play bass right now. Just strum along to the show.
Well, I'd have to like get it and plug it in, and
no, that's work. Never mind. Yeah, no.
He's very practical, just like a real bassist should be.
Yeah. Also, I found out that if you try to play instruments into the mic on Discord, it does not come through because Discord has some kind of like, I guess it's noise reduction or something, but it like it cuts out like certain frequencies that it doesn't like.
Yeah, it's like every time I do screams.
Yeah. Or laughs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dog humping your leg.
Back in base.
So are there any dogs humping your leg in Tacticord?
There are no. Not.
That's
but yeah, I know that. But I noticed like the artist reusing assets. So like in Tacticord or in Backbeat, you know, there's a dog that's like that hangs out in your garage when you practice, and it's like tail like kind of randomly bops up and down sometimes. And I noticed that dog pop up in a schoolyard in Tacticord. So the artist like took that dog and stuck it in there. And it's just, like laying by the side of the playground, watching you fight these hordes of school children.
Just call it a reference. Yeah.
Yes.
Have your own Turbo the dog.
There you go.
We have an Air Bud. Mm-hmm. Can a dog play bass?
There's no rules that say that a dog can't play bass, so.
And I'd say a lot of famous bassists have been called dogs at some point in their life, in their careers.
Yeah.
Who are some of your favorite bassists?
Mine or his?
Yeah. Let's ask Chris.
I was just about to make a Flea joke, because dogs playing bass, Flea.
I thought Flea was a drummer.
I missed this guy.
No.
Chad Smith, okay. The drummer.
That shows how much I know. Okay. Shows how little I know about Chili Peppers.
Yeah, Will Ferrell's the drummer.
That is so true, by the way. I don't know if anyone has ever seen the Chad Smith, Will Ferrell drum battle on Jimmy Fallon. Check it out. It is pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah, Chris, what kind of bass
know
players
that,
do you
but
like?
Of course he knows.
Huh?
I don't know. We all talked at the same time. Chris, who are some of your favorite bass players?
So my favorites are like Jack Cassidy. Really love Ray Shulman, Mont Campbell. What's his name? Chuck Levy. I was like trying to see if his name was spelled with an E or not, as if that made a difference.
What are your thoughts on Les Claypool?
He's fine. He's like I would say like he's a really imaginative like composer as far as like bass goes, and he has like that good like percussive style and everything. Like he has his own thing and kind of nails it. It's kind of like there's some bassists that like have a lot of stuff that wouldn't really conventionally work in all outfits, but in their own thing it's like it pretty much stands alone. Square Pusher's another example of that. He's got like he's got a really eclectic style that doesn't really have much to do with bass. It's just that's just the instrument that he uses to drive the rest of the sound. So, like, that's kind of how I feel about Les Claypool and Primus. I've heard him play regular bass, and he's just fine. And like I said, he's mostly like...
Am I giving a shout out to Geddy Lee?
Yeah, I'm not a big Rush fan, but I mean, he's a great bassist too. They're not really my big thing as far as that goes. Most of the guys I mentioned were prog guys. So
I was always a fan of Fieldy from Korn. Is it Fieldy? Yeah, Fieldy from Korn.
Yeah, he's like another interesting guy that was the first time I'd ever, not the first time I'd seen an extended range bass, but the first time I'd seen somebody tune the B string down to A and just really like slapping like the lowest note. Yeah, and holding the bass like vertically was always really funny to me. Also, I completely had a brain fart about Chuck Rainey is who I was thinking of. He's a really, really good session bassist. And by the same token, God, yeah, I'm terrible with names right now. Leland Sklar is another great session bassist whose lines I really enjoy. But yeah, and there's just all kinds of... I love a lot of bassists. There's all kinds of them. I've stolen from all of them, too.
Nice. So, David, what tactical RPGs... I don't want to say that you stole from, but what tactical RPGs have you been inspired by... in some of the mechanics in this game.
Yeah, like I said, I think that there's a lot of that I like wanted to draw from, and I guess maybe the things that I didn't want to use maybe is a better reference rather than the things that I wanted to use. Like I said, I was playing like the Final Fantasy Tactics Ogre, which was done by the same designer, and P5 Tactica, which is in the Persona 5 franchise. And XCOM, I played Chimera Squad and a little bit of XCOM 2. Admittedly, I did not clear XCOM 2. But I think the thing that I was taking away from a lot of these is that we wanted to build a game where the formula is very, very compact. You know, we're a bit, we've been playing games for a while. You know, we're adults now, we have commitments, and as much as I love big long games, I like something you can pick up and put down, and something that you can get through, you know, in 12 and 15 hours. You know, not something that takes like 40, 80, 100 hours. As much as I love like doing that with like an Uncharted or The Witcher or something like that, I think there's not enough games out there that give you a diluted a focused kind of concentrated gameplay. So we have small maps. All of the boards are no more than, I think, 12 or 16 tiles a piece, each one of the boards. And we have a turn limit, so the turns are at most 4 turns that you have to clear all the objectives in that time. So you're always racing against time. You get through the levels quickly. I don't think, other than the last level, maybe no level in the game will take more than 15 minutes to complete. The problem with those XCOM-type games is you have sometimes these slogs, where, okay, it takes a long time. The map is huge. There's lots of enemies. I was playing Wargroove a lot, and there's this phase where, you know, it's fun playing the game maybe like 70% the way through, but then you get to the point that my co-founder Magnus calls mopping up, where you know the outcome of the battle. You see what's going to happen, but you still have to march your units that much farther and grind them into the dirt and things like that. And those are moments where you kind of feel like, this is just, I wish this was done. You know, like there's a bit too much click, click, click. You know, in Final Fantasy Tactics too, you have that thing where I'm moving for 2 turns before I actually get to do any damage and things like that. That setup is like, what did I really do other than move forward 3 tiles with each of my band members and then wait for 20 guys to move forward 3 tiles a piece? You know, that kind of dead space is something we wanted to avoid and really respect the player's time.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that a lot. That is one of my biggest gripes with tactical games, is how long some of the battles could take. Like, Final Fantasy Tactics is great, but when you're a high level and you hit a random battle, you want to cry.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah, I know exactly. You know, and like, and especially if you care about the story, because then you're like, I want to get on to the next story beat. I want to know what happens in the next story. Why is that? why I'd have to wait so long to get to that. I was playing a lot of Demon School right around Christmas. I cleared that game. That's a really great game. Fantastic game. And then I think those individual battles they have in that title are also another good example of none of them are super long. Their boards are really small, you know, and they're actually grading you on how many turns it takes usually to clear the missions. And you're looking for something. It's like less than 3 turns, less than 2 turns. So it is really that kind of bite-sized tactics and move on, get more story, carry on, kind of thing like that.
Now, in Tacticord, with some of the time-limited battles, if you do not accomplish it in, say, 2, 3, 4 turns, is that a fail state, or does the story progress with a different outcome?
That is a fail state. The game itself is not super hard. We're intentionally trying to make it not super hard. We want to make it so it's fun, it's splendor, it's a romp. There are ranks inside that go up from C to S plus, but one of the key things we have is if you run out of health, you run out of heat or cool, you're dead. And if you take too many turns, you're dead. In that case, it's the cops that are showing up and telling you you're playing too damn loud. And then it's game over.
Do you foresee the potential of maybe having like difficulty settings in that regard? Or are you doing like one solid baseline? This is what the experience will be for everybody.
Baseline.
I think that difficulty wise, we're probably just going to have one difficulty set up. It's possible we could add something else maybe like after launch, depending on what people are looking for. Like, you know, if you've played like Overcooked or those kind of things where you had like the 3-star missions, then you have like the Kevin missions, or then you have like to get 4 stars, you need to have 12,000 points. And they're like jacked up the points really, really high because obviously people could break it and knew how to get a lot of points. So you set the goalpost further for them. But in general, I think the core game, the campaign mode, is really going to be about getting those S plus ranks for all of the missions.
And it's good that you've likely wrote the narrative in such a way where even if you're like, man, this isn't challenging me too much, but I want to keep going because these are some cool characters. And I love the circumstances I'm dealing with here.
Right.
So who are some of the voice actors and musicians that you've got involved in this game?
So in terms of the musicians, we're working right now with a guitarist and a keyboard player named Chris Laney. And he is in the Danish metal band Pretty Maids, among others. He lives here in Stockholm, fortunately, and he's the one that's doing all of the composing as well as the instrument playing for the guitars and the bass and the keys and things like that. We don't have a final vocalist yet, so we're using Chris at the moment in development, but we will probably... we might end up going with a different metal vocalist that can cover all the different kind of styles that we want to go with. In terms of the characters, I did want to create a talkie, but you know, it's very expensive, and it's also a lot of extra money and time, and then to have entirely voice acted cast. So we're kind of going the route with a kind of like how a lot of indie games and also Zelda, I think the Echoes of Wisdom also one has like kind of like a, you hear like a, or like a, really? Or like some kind of little sound bite at the beginning, just to give you the flavor of the character, and then the text appears. But all of the voices that are of the band members right now are people from the studio. So like our artists and musicians and things like that.
Very cool. Well, if you need a gasp, I can pull off a pretty good gasp. Gasp,
Master Joe.
Huh? Yeah.
Male gasp 45. Got it.
Gasp?
Gasp.
Gasps provided by the SML podcast.
And how?
Oh, my Lord. But
I get the moment where I have to... Great.
I was going to say, this one kind of speaks to Purnell's heart. You're looking to have this game be playable in small chunks. Are you looking to optimize it for Steam Deck?
Yeah, it already works great on Steam Deck. So if you do the playtest right now, it'll work on Steam Deck.
There you go, Pernell. Bust out the Steam Deck. Download it right now.
Yeah, with almost no...
Steam Deck is where I live.
Yeah.
That's good news for me, because that's literally where I live half the freaking time. So I need my games to be portable, and I need them to be functional off of a PC.
So. Yeah, I agree with you completely. Like, I don't even own a PC. So I'm really happy to have the Steam Deck to make my Steam library accessible for the people that didn't port it to Mac, or the 0.5% of us that actually play games on Mac.
Well, folks like me appreciate folks like you, because that's how it's supposed to be. Let us use our freaking handheld. Because that goes along with the idea what you're describing about not having a ton of free time and wanting the ability to play your way when you can.
Yeah.
The Steam Deck is perfect for that.
Yeah.
Are you looking into any other platforms? Is this something that we might see show up on console?
Yes, we would like to release on console. And we have some plans for that internally, but we have not made any announcements yet. But I'm a console gamer first myself, so you can have faith that it will make it there to a fair number of them when the time comes.
Very good. I'm not sure if this is something you'd be able to comment on, but if you were looking at the Xbox route, was the Play Anywhere program something that you might consider?
Yeah, definitely. I think that one thing I appreciate as a owner of many devices and play styles, I guess, so to speak, you know, like a Purnell. I want to be on the sofa at night when I'm tired. I want to have something in my hands, but I also want to be able to play on a nice big screen sometimes. Having that save data move around seamlessly, I think is a really important thing. And it's a great idea to have that kind of cloud sync. So you could play it on your PC, or you could play it on your Xbox, or you could play it on your handheld and have your content move with you.
What was that, Aki?
Said my hero. I love that shit, because sometimes, because I mostly play stuff on my Xbox, but then there are times where I'm just like, I don't want to play on my Xbox. I just want to do shit on my PC, and right. I love when I can play a game on both. It makes my life so much better, because sometimes the PC is just the route I want to go.
I mean, there's times where Ashley's watching TV and I have to use my computer if I want to play a game.
Right. From what I can tell, it's really not that difficult as a developer to make that happen. Thankfully, with Microsoft's SDKs and whatnot. So I'm looking forward to that.
What are your thoughts on Microsoft's Project Helix announcement?
I think it's interesting. I've been making games now for 25 years, and I've seen the console generations come and go, and you kind of look at the strategy that Microsoft has used, and that's changed slightly over time, but a lot of things stay the same with them. And I'm excited about new stuff. I like new stuff. I like new ways to improve player experiences in terms of like hardware, or whether it's like a software thing with, you know, like to play anywhere. But at the same time, you know, I am sensitive to prices of things just like everyone else. And I know that people keep the rumors flying around like it's going to be $1,000, or, you know, that like that kind of premium high end, that kind of, I guess, making it so that gaming becomes like a rich man's hobby is kind of sad to me. You know, I think like really being able to have gaming be accessible for everyone, I don't think you should have to, you know, have a whole huge amount of cash just to have that kind of gaming experience. I mean, consoles have always been at a premium, but I think it's just getting kind of ridiculous. And I'd feel sad if like, you know, a new generation of gamers got locked out of that because they couldn't keep up. And I think people will keep playing games, but then they wouldn't be on Xbox. You know, then they would probably be on Steam, or they would be on some retro handheld or something else like that. So it's, you know, you've seen lots of the big tech companies kind of go in that direction. You see like Apple go really high end and make everything about the margin high end. And then they kind of do a U-turn like, you know what, there's more consumers we're not getting because it is things are too expensive. And then you find, you know, the iPhone E series, like the mid-range prices that are closer to Google's Pixel. You got the MacBook Neo, it was just announced. It's like, finally, you can have a reasonable laptop computer for $600. And I think those are important things. But I think all companies kind of end up there sooner or later, because at some point, you've sold all the high-end devices you can to all the people that can afford them. And then, you know, the shareholders are going to want more growth. So you're going to have to find new markets.
You think we could see? Go ahead.
What I found about that is they just fire people instead. So they can be like, now we're not paying them, so we grew more. That's all I've noticed so far with the gaming industry when it comes to that.
the industry is very, very
toxic as shit right now. Toxic,
carnivorous. Yeah, like pick your dog eat dog. Yeah, take your pick, I guess, of tough word.
Dog eat dog, because they're eating themselves. They're cannibalizing themselves. They're not even eating other groups.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got like, how many studios does Microsoft own now? Like after absorbing Activision Blizzard, and then it's, you know, like this content company acquiring other company thing going on with the media. You have like Paramount, and then going after Warner Brothers, and then like all these giant.
Oh, that one hurts. Ugh.
Yeah, just it's like this consolidation of all this IP is just nuts to me. You know,
it's extremely frustrating for sure.
And then you see a situation where, on the flip side, Sony picks up a studio like Bluepoint and shutters them. Like, why? That is such an insanely talented studio, and it just, that's one I don't understand that closure.
For the exact same reason, the, what was it? The rhythm game that Xbox came out with that was really, really good.
Hi-Fi Rush. Super,
yes. Yeah. Same reason that company was gotten rid of, to make it look like they were growing.
No. They got rid of them because they didn't think it was profitable. Sony got rid of Bluepoint because they made them do a live service game and then canceled it.
Yeah, we need to get away from live service.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers need to understand that you cannot just forever make money off of a single game and make all the money, and then proceed to release another game just like it and make all the money. You can only make all the money one fucking time. You need to get the fuck over it.
Tell Fortnite.
And that's an interesting point to make in regards to that too. The idea of that, like, I was talking to a friend the other day, and he was talking about how excited he was for the new World of Warcraft expansion that's coming out. And my first thought there was, they're still doing anything with that product. They're holding on to that audience that they've had since like 2004. So if nobody's getting out of the way for new live service games, there's going to come a point where not everybody can get their, I guess, get their trough filled by the same group of people that are into these kinds of games in the first place. It's not going to work.
And Final Fantasy XI is still going strong too.
That's true.
And that definitely floors me, since wasn't 14 meant to quote unquote fix 11? And be like the better game, and yet both games are still working somehow.
I don't think it was meant to fix it. Like when 14 came out, that was a piece of dog shit, and then they re-released it, which fixed that.
Ah.
Yeah. A Realm Reborn was basically a relaunch of 14. Even they, you know, they had what? Dawn Trail come out like last year? Something like that. The complete collection's on sale on Xbox right now for $30, I think. You get all the expansions.
Nice.
I can't get in a monthly fees. That's my problem.
My thing is that it's a monthly fee, which, I mean, in a general sense, I can understand it, but in a world where I don't need that for video games I'm playing, why would I intentionally go that direction for this specific game? It doesn't click for me. And then it's almost like how Duolingo works, where eventually you get to the point where you become accustomed to this environment and this game you're playing with your friends. And now the idea of canceling your account sounds insane, because now you have to give up all that work you put in and all the experiences you have with all your friends. And then you just kind of feel trapped in this hamster wheel of a product. I'd rather just get a one-er and done-er. Pay one fee, play it, be done with it, and move on. Like Tacticord. It's going to come out. I'm going to buy it. I can play it. It'll be done. And it'll be good. And I can move on to the next game.
That's the goal, Perno. Yeah.
So I know it's early, but Pernell kind of alluded. Is there any projects in the works for the future from Ichigo Ichi? Or is it still just all hands on deck with Tacticord?
I mean, we have a backlog of things that we want to try, you know, like There's a number of prototypes that we've built that we didn't move forward with just yet. And then there's also some spiritual kind of like successors to other things.
Is one of them a spiritual successor to Guitar Man?
That's true.
I want that.
Yeah.
We have,
I picture it being a tough thing to do, but I want someone to try.
There are studios Japanese studios that we work with that are also in the diaspora, former Ennis employees, and we've talked about getting together to do that kind of thing before, and we would like to build that, but obviously we need to find like funding so that we can build it. So those kind of things are like one of the things on the back burner. At Ichigo ETA, you know, we have other ones that we're pitching, trying to get funding for and things like that, and those projects exist, but right now it's really hard to make two games at once. So usually I just work on the other ones, like on Christmas holiday or summer break or things like that. When everyone else is gone, then I can focus on that future stuff. But the day-to-day times when, like right now, when we're in the middle of production, then it's all tactic board.
Hypothetically, do you think a spiritual successor to Guitaru Man, same gameplay style, but clearly different name, different IP, all that stuff. Do you think it could succeed on Kickstarter?
I don't know. I think it's tough. Like, if you look at...
Because I'm ready to throw money at my fucking screen for that. Just throw nickels at the... Please there take was it.
There was a game about, was it 5 years ago or so, I guess, that the Ennis was trying to do a Kickstarter on. And it was between Ennis and Nananosha, so they got I forget his name right now, the guy that did Parappa the Rapper, creator of that, and they were partnering with him, and it was him and Ennis, and they were going to make a game that was somewhere between Guitar Man and Parappa the Rapper, and they did a Kickstarter for that, and it failed, and the project kind of died on the table there, so. That's when they had the names of, you know, Keiji Anno and Shad, like big names behind those kind of games, and that Kickstarter didn't make it. So, I mean, you could say that they failed. The Kickstarter itself was not well executed upon. But if they couldn't get the funding with that names, I don't know. If I came up now and said, "Hey, I'm going to do it," you know, I have even less notoriety. I think I'd have even a harder time.
Is it possible that their higher profile names led to a higher price tag than might have been necessary for a project like that?
Possibly. I really don't remember the details and the financials, unfortunately. You know, but the truth of the matter is it takes a lot of money to make a game right now. And Kickstarter... What the general rule of thumb with Kickstarter these days is that it's your completion funding, and it's not really for funding. It's for marketing purposes. It's your victory lap. So you kind of have to already have a game. It has to already be mostly done, and you have to have the money to make it. And then you have to get a lot of people to sign up, like, you know, for wish listing and getting fan excited about it. And then you do a Kickstarter, because then it's going to succeed because you already have, you know, 30,000, 40,000 fans or whatever it is. That are evangelizing the game for you. But I don't think you can really win a game Kickstarter out of the blue unless you already have that kind of business proof coming into it, unfortunately. So that's just the reality of crowdfunding these days, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer to see what happened to Kickstarter. It feels like in the beginning, it felt like a legitimate way for fans to show what they wanted games to be. And now it just feels like this is what we have, either like it or don't, but it's done and you're just paying for a plush.
Yeah, I think a lot of people looked at what happened with Broken Age and things like that and been like, "Oh, look, we can get millions of dollars because we've got a big name like Tim Schafer, you know, and it's going to be just like those old time point and clicks." You know, and that game had this, like, became a fantastic documentary series about how that blew up and how it ended up in the end and everything. But then a lot of indie developers or developers that worked for bigger companies before that had moved on to their own studios thought, "I can do that too." And I think unless you're Hideo Kojima, you know, who doesn't need a Kickstarter, I think you're not going to be able to pull in that kind of hype anymore. I think that that train has left the station in terms of where gamers are willing to put their money for projects.
Well, when it comes time to it, why should people put their money on Tacticord?
I think
Great.
That's right.
Now well, we got like. I figure Tony, we're coming up Tony. On the hour. I figure I like resell the game and.
No, you did. Thank you. That's, you're absolutely
full
right.
Full circle thing. Yeah.
Tacticord is a very unique game, and it's done in a style that is unlike any other. Ichigo Ichie, for better or worse, you know, we make weird music-infused games, and we do it in a way that other titles don't. You might think, well, I'm not a big music fan, but we're bringing something really fresh to the turn-based tactics genre. You know, like I said, it's about playing the game quickly, working under these constraints, respecting your time, trying something new. We have that blood sacrifice mechanic and that shared health pool. And, you know, things like it's not long battles. There are no missile-based attacks. You know, there's a lot of basic fundamentals of tactics games that we have kind of turned on their head here. So it's a fun little separate piece from a gameplay perspective. It has that story of Diane, that origin story, which is grounded in, you know, 1990s. Like, I've been watching a lot of my so-called life in Party of Five, writing and thinking about what makes the characters resonate. I really like that. And being able to create your own songs, you know, to create these hair metal anthems and choose lyrics and have agency in building this music in a simple turn-by-turn style. You're not going to find it anywhere else. And I think it's a great little package, and I hope that you can try something new and become a music fan, discover some new bands. And we want to build that out together. So like I said, we're doing a playtest right now. The playtest runs for another week. You can download the game for free, and it'll play all you want and give us your feedback. Tacticord.com will take you to the Steam page.
If nothing else, wishlist it. Wishlist.
Yes, wishlist. If you don't have time to play it, at least wishlist it, follow it, join the Discord. We really like to talk about music and games and get people's thoughts on things and do that together as a community.
Well, we love talking about music and games with you. It has been coming up on the hour point. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up before we let you get going?
No, I think we covered all the points, and I'm looking forward to see what you guys think about what we have going right now and working with you again in the future. So let's keep in touch, guys.
Absolutely. Door's always open for you here, David. We love having you on. Where else can people keep up to date with you, the company, whatever you want is doing? Give us all the info.
We are on every social platform known to man, it feels like. Like, if you look at the number of icons that we have at the bottom of our Steam events.
Even Friendster?
Yes, even Friend. Wow, Friendster. I haven't thought about that in forever. Thank you. We have all of our music on Deezer and Tidal and Spotify. If you listen to soundtracks from Backbeat, Discord, of course, you can find our Discord. The place we're most active is Blue Sky and Twitter. Every Thursday, we're in the turn-based Thursday thread where all these turn-based games are working together to help raise awareness for the titles. Ichigo Ichie Games. Search for that, or 151A Games, as the alternate spelling goes, and you will find us.
Very good. Purnell, any final questions on your end?
Oh, no, I was lacing them throughout the interview. I'm just ready for the release, man. I mean, we got a while, but you know how I am. I'll show up, I'll be ready to go.
True. Let's get rocked.
Chris, final question on your end, anything?
Sorry, I was muted. No, I'm good.
Aki, anything on your end?
Who's your favorite bass?
I mean, you could answer that if you want.
You should answer it. There it is. That's your final question. We are well played.
My character is my favorite bassist.
There you go. Perfect.
There you go.
Aki, final question.
How degenerate can you make the songs? Because you said you make your own songs throughout it. Degen, can you get?
So the songs are set up so they can be always sounding good, quote unquote. So they come from a number of audio stems you can mix together. So you're doing A-B choices in each time. So it's like lyric A, lyric B. And those are 4-bar lyrics. So you probably end up making about, I guess, 10 or 12 lyrical choices over the course of a song, and maybe about 4 or 5 guitar solos. So it's a combination of those different things. So it's not super off the wall. You don't get to write your own lyrics. But there are colorful tongue-in-cheek references to lots of things in 80s culture regarding metal bands that you can pick from while you are making the songs.
And I have a feeling this will not be M-rated, to the dismay of Aki.
No, I'm sorry. I'm trying to... I need a bit bigger audience than that, but maybe T for teen. Yeah.
Very good. David, always a pleasure having you on the show. We will let you get going. I know it is late where you are. Thank you so much for staying up with us. Do you have any final words before we let you get going?
Just peace and take it easy, guys, and good luck dealing with that wild weather.
Hey, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Oh, that was good. I love having him on. It's always a fun chat when David comes on.
Well, he's a pleasure. Good guy. Very talented at that. So, and he's got good taste in music and games. What's not to like?
Indeed. Speaking of taste in games, we got to tell people if they should like games. And we got 5 to talk about tonight. Should we dive into these?
Sure. Let's do the dance.
If we have to, I guess.
Yes, we have. You know the drill, Aki. That's why you're. That's literally why you're here tonight.
I thought I was just here to hang.
You're never just here to hang, you weirdo.
That's bullshit.
Yeah. First game to talk about tonight, Fatal Frame 2 Crimson Butterfly Remake, developed, published, and provided to us by Koei Tecmo Games. Thank you, Koei Tecmo Games. Aki, say thank you.
Aki, say thank you.
Like, I will not.
You're terrible at this. Released March 11th, Series X and S, PS5 and PC for $49.99. This Japanese-style horror-adventure game follows twin sisters who become lost in an abandoned village, hunted by vengeful spirits. Using the camera obscura, a device that can capture and seal away the impossible, they fight ghosts as the story unfolds. Aki, what is going on in Fatal Frame 2 Crimson Butterfly Remake?
Hey, in this, you play as one of a set of twins. Which one? Fuck if I know. I can never keep their names straight, to be honest.
Mayu! Mayu's the sister who is missing, I believe. The main character
that works.
Name a lot.
Yeah, I don't pay a lot of attention to that. I just know you follow her.
Jesus.
But you and your twin are walking around in the forest, and then suddenly you're in an abandoned village that never sees the light of day. Because...
Aki, guess what?
I swear to God.
You can't say no words. 5 minutes starts now.
Well, in
now,
this game,
go.
You won't need to.
Well, I mean, it scares the tinkle out of you. Dear Pete.
Someone's going to get hurt very, very badly.
You got 5 minutes. Go.
So... yeah, y'all, you end up in this village, and you're trying to chase after your sister, and she's kind of just basically ignoring you and continuing the walk on, as people do in these series. And you start seeing ghosts around, and you eventually find your way to this nifty little camera, and it allows you to take pictures of the dead. Not necessarily of corpses, but of the spirits. Dun, dun, dun. And you use that to fight against the wraiths that attack you, as well as taking pictures of the more chillax ghosts, all to destroy them, I think, for points. It does have multiple difficulties that you can play it on. Each one affects how many points you get.
What difficulty are you playing on?
I'm playing it on normal. I couldn't
be bothered. Is it like easy, normal, hard, or is there more?
There's easy, normal, and hard.
I didn't know if it was like easy, normal, hard, nightmare, and then like pee yourself.
No, there should be a pee yourself one. And that should be all of them.
I want to take a second. I'm like looking at the camera like my camera's working. I watched Aki play this a little bit earlier, and there was a particularly scary part. And when it was over, she's like, I'm pausing and I am going to go to the bathroom because I don't want to continue on and I'm not sure if I can make it. So pause. I'll be back.
Have a bladder exposed.
Yep.
That's pretty
funny. Oh, yeah. No, I'm more than happy to announce when a game makes me fear pee. And this series makes me fear pee. And
that is the mark of a good game, because nothing scares you on this show.
No, not really. I've had maybe five games that have made me fear pee. And most of them have been the Fatal Frame series, so you know
I need to know what those games were.
Well, three of them were all Fatal Frame games. Then there was Perception, which is the scariest game I've ever played, and I don't remember what the last one was, but it was one I reviewed a year or two ago. No, I've never reviewed Paw Patrol.
Explorer.
That might make me fear pee. But no, so you're taking pictures of the ghostesses that you find around and destroying them for points. Depending on what difficulty you play on, also determines how many points you get. The harder it is, the more points you get. And you use those points to turn around and buy both charms as well as things for your photo modes, because you have a photo mode, not necessarily where you're taking pictures of ghostesses, but, you know, just the standard photo mode that you find in most games. And it gives you lots of different options, and you can buy stuff like hands coming out of the ground and stuff like that, that you can put into the picture with you. The charms end up being anything from, oh, here's one that increases damage of your standard filter of your camera, and there's a whole bunch of levels to it, or here's this other, you know, version of your camera that allows you to see through walls, see ghosts that are on other sides of walls within a certain radius of you and stuff, so you can prepare to fight them and things like that. And some of them are like, oh, hey, the more health you have, the more damage you do. But the less health you have, the more defense you have, so you take less damage. Things like that. So there's lots of them, and I'm sure many of them can probably be upgraded. I haven't bought many because they're very, very, very exorbitantly high-priced. However, this game is different from some of the prior ones. This is a linear game like all of them have been, but it's all set in the same world, whereas like the first game I played, it was all mission based. So you selected a mission, you played it, and then you went back to the mission screen and you could choose the next level, or you could replay that one and get more points. And then the second game was like, it was just a straight narrative thing, and it was still very much more or less mission based, but you couldn't play the prior missions again. You could only replay the one that you were on, which annoyed me. And this one is more like, this is one continuous world. You're not choosing missions or anything. You're just walking through. And you can turn around and you can go right back to the very beginning area that you started the game at and walk through the entire village all over again if you want. And you can do that at the level one, or I assume near the end of the game at least. So you have access to everything. It all stays there. And one of the primary reasons for that is that you can equip charms or go without, and wraiths will appear while you're just walking around. And they're just generic ones. It's not like they're going to be something special every time. And you get to fight them and get more points so you can buy stuff. That's probably why everything is so exorbitantly priced, is because you can farm that stuff and get as many points as you want. If you just want to spend the time and have to do those fights over and over and over. So that's nice. There is hammer film and healing items and stuff strewn throughout the entire village that you can go and collect. Does not respawn, sadly. I would love if it did, but that's just not life. You can't buy any of the camera films, which is at least not where I am in the game, which is weird, because in lots of the games you specifically can grab them in levels, but you can also turn around and buy them between levels. So that's really weird to me. I'm not exactly against it, because in most of these games, I generally use just the crappiest film, which is infinite, so it doesn't really bother me that much. This game, I've started using it just because it's all laying around constantly. So it's interesting to actually see what the other films can actually do. And yeah, it is really, really good with the atmosphere. This is very much Asian horror. It's very atmospheric, and I love it, and that is why I fear P. It is amazing. There is one issue, which is kind of where I am. This isn't just, oh, hey, let's get rid of all the ghostesses. There's also at least one, and I'm pretty sure it's only one, enemy that you can't actually get rid of. It just chases you, and if it catches you, you're dead. And then you restart from checkpoint and hope that it doesn't catch you again. And that kind of sucks, just because it ends up being kind of a, did they notice me get in here? Oh, I have no luck, so now I'm restarting the section all over again. Granted, they're not super long, but it, still, you don't want to have to replay the same section over and over and over just because, you know, you're not able to get away from this thing fast enough. Granted, I already knew this was going to be a thing because there's achievements based on that. And I always look at achievements first because I want to know if there's something weird that I need to do in the game. Try to get it without having to play an entire playthrough like 90% of the way through to get an achievement that I missed because I wasn't paying attention, because that drives me nuts. There's also there's also a ton of like collectibles in this game. From there's little spirit stones that you can play in a spirit radio that you find around, and those will some of those will give you like side quests that you can go do that give you all a bunch of different documents and a lot of pictures of ghosts that you can take, both good and the bad ones. There's a bunch of statues that are twin statues, the whole thing about this game, that you need to find and take pictures of both of them within the same frame, and sometimes that's not very easy, and you have to find them, and there's a lot of them, will say. And then there's also upgrade points that you can go and find. They're little jewels that you basically find around, and they're to upgrade your camera, and there's hundreds of them, because your camera, lots of the upgrades take multiple ones of them from the get-go, and they don't get any cheaper. So yeah.
Well, speaking of upgrades, we could talk about price for this now, because there's a standard edition and a deluxe edition, which has some upgrades for your character. Normal game clocks in at $50 right now. There is the digital deluxe edition that includes include accessories, costumes, a deluxe charm, also a digital soundtrack and art book. What are your thoughts on the game at 50 and the bundle at 70?
I think the game is definitely worth it. All of these games are really good, and I am so glad that we keep getting these, because I never played the originals, and now I very much get why everyone loved these, because these are amazing games. The deluxe editions are kind of up to you, because again, it is mostly just cosmetic stuff that you're getting. Yeah. They don't give any benefits. They're literally here's the costume. Yes, the charm in this game does. It provides you with more time when you hit them in a special way. It gives you more time to take pictures. And it also promotes the appearance of certain wraiths to show up more often so you can get more points.
Yeah, the effect of that is obtainable through standard gameplay progression, so it's not an exclusive to the deluxe edition. Just an early bonus. Yeah. And then for the people who are interested, right now, I don't know if it's supposed to be free or not, but there is a deluxe costume early bonus purchase set that is showing up as free on the Xbox store, so feel free to grab those while you can. Overall, did you give the overall verdict at 50?
Yeah, main game, definitely worth it. For the deluxe edition, if you like the costumes, I think it's worth it. I have all of the deluxe upgrades on my wish list, except for this one, because I actually have this one already.
Nice.
So for me, I think the deluxe edition is the way to go personally, but I really like the costumes. I think they're really fun. Nice. But that's like all the prior games. That's all they are, is just costumes. This one has the charm, but as Joe just said, you can get the same effects later on in the game anyways. Yeah. So it's really up to you on that. I really like the extra costumes. I think they're really cute. Joe, you've actually seen them, because I actually went through them. Those costumes that I had when I was playing the game were those costumes. So
very good. And you also went like triple the time needed to not curse. So nice. Next game, Calamity Angel Special Delivery, developed by Idea Factory, Compile Heart, published by Idea Factory International. Release February 17th on Switch, PS4, PS5 for $29.99. Will hit Steam later this year. Lead a ragtag group of kooky carriers in this delivery service RPG as they protect and track packages through the treacherous terrain, unruly monsters, and meet other sneaky delivery service teams ready to stake their claim as the best service in the region. Rain or shine, a new adventure awaits with every package. Purnell, what is going on in Calamity Angel's Special Delivery?
Well, basically, this game is a fusion of RPG, turn-based, and board game, more or less. You play as a character that goes by the name of Yori, whose gender you choose at the beginning of the game, you know, one type or another type, and you go with whatever. They each have their own individual voices, which is also pretty cool, too. Same name to make the dubbing of the other characters easier, I think, is what the logic behind that was. Smart way to save some money on voice acting. The way this game works, without getting too specific, because there's a lot of terminology that I mentally washed out of my head, but you live in a world that thrives on the concept of people delivering mail from town to town because it's not safe out in the wild, out and about. The packages also somehow manage to store the energy of the deliverer or the person sending the package. Basically, the more you care about the person getting the package, the more energy goes into the package, and there are a lot of people that want that energy. The world also thrives on said energy because there are ruins and towns that are built and made functional by delivery energy. Somebody was on drugs when they wrote this plot, and that's okay because it comes up with some creative narratives. I'm okay with that. There's also a delivery fairy who stores the energy and transfers it to the main character's weapon, which becomes a giant stamp hammer to stamp monsters out like a delivery stamp. It is hilarious. But essentially, your main character just passed the leader's exam to become the leader of a delivery group in the guild of the town you play in from. So she gets dumped onto a team that's referred to as the Calamity Angels, hence the title of the game. And she is tasked with leading this team through a series of deliveries to try to make a name for themselves and eventually possibly save the world. Did I say that? Yes, I did. So the way this game works is off the offbeat, of course, you start the game, you go to the message board or the request board to see who needs to have a package delivered. Once you've selected a package, your character has a limited amount of inventory space for carrying items. And of those items, one of them has to be the package that you are transporting. So you have to slot it into your inventory. Different packages take up different amounts of space, thereby limiting what you can take on your adventure in addition to the aforementioned package. Then you'll choose your party member of amongst there like five or so you can choose from, and you can make up a party of three people taking up either the front, middle, or back row of the build. After that, you choose the map on the board. You'd want to choose the map that the package needs to get delivered to, but sometimes you might want to go somewhere else to engage in an event that you might have passed over on a previous trip. But then once you've chosen a map, boom, you officially go into the board game aspect of the game. Every area of the game is broken out into nodes or spaces that you can traverse by using a spinner. Hit the spinner button, spinner goes whoom, and when it stops, that tells you how many spaces you can go. You have a certain number of turns to get from the beginning of the delivery to the actual delivery recipient. And each time you take a step or a series of steps from a compass spin, that denotes one turn. Each space on the board can be any level of event. It can be like a positive event, a negative event, where the choices might result in something good or bad. You might come across a battle or some various perks that might benefit you on your run, amongst other just generalized events. In the event that one of those events is a battle, well, get into a skirmish. And at this point, you get to your party members on the left-hand side of the screen, monsters on the right. And your main character is kind of like the aid that you would see in the Persona games, where they're up in the upper left corner just giving you advice from time to time. So in the case of this game, your main character is basically the person who can deliver items to use on characters, because other characters can't use items. And they can do one other thing, which I'll talk about shortly. In a battle, characters have a set of attacks or attack categories and actual attacks associated with those categories they can perform. They have their traits like attack or magic, elemental properties, you know it. You've seen this before in other games. However, the thing about this game that might make it a make or break for you is the fact that characters, the party is called the Calamity Angels. And the reason for that, aside from the game writing it, is such that they're just kind of crazy and unorthodox delivery service individuals. But the other reason is because in combat, you're not guaranteed to be obeyed when you issue a command to one of your party members, because they have minds of their own and they can be really fickle when they want to be. To the left of the options for selecting attacks, you'll see the character's portrait. And depending on what option you select, the character will make a different face. That face will determine how interested they are in doing the thing you're trying to select. So, for example, one of the characters in this game is a mage that specializes in magic attacks, but prefers to punch things, therefore doing less damage when she punches things. But she likes it, so whatever. Now, you might be finding a monster who's weak to wind magic, and you're telling yourself, we really need you to pop off a wind spell. Let's select it. She's like, I don't want to do that. I want to punch shit. Well, guess what? You try to select the attack. She goes, nah, I ain't going to do that. And she switches to the punch attack, and she goes and punches the guy. Now, funny enough, though, sometimes when they disobey you, the attacks or abilities that they decide to invoke instead may get a buff or some sort of enhancement or whatever. And sometimes it ends up working to your advantage when the person punches, but they're angry when they do it, and it just kills something. So whatever. But there are other times that where this might come out to bite you, like when your healer decides she doesn't want to heal right now. She just wants to kind of stare into her wallet and count her pennies. That becomes a pain when that happens. They also have special attacks, which are triggered by conditions, none of which I've ever quite really picked up on as the what did it, but it usually ends up being a life-saving or game-changing maneuver when it does occur, because it can end up being an attack that's like a screen wipe for all the enemies or a full heal for your party or whatever. And it generally come along with a nice graphical art show to accompany them. It's a nice time. While you're exploring the map with your package and your timer is ticking down, there is also the occasional time where there's a specific type of monster who's a special type of monster who will also appear on the board and will stalk you. Every turn that you move, he will get to move a space or two. And if he collides with you, that's going to trigger a battle. That monster is a special type in that you have to fight him like normal, but once the monster is down to near death, the main character comes out, you perform a special attack involving the thing I mentioned earlier about the stamp hammer, and it kills the monsters. Fun thing about it, I just kind of look at it and think, well, this wasn't necessary, but I guess they wanted to give the main character a reason to exist. So I was like, here you go, stamp hammer, whatever. But that's what they do. Each time you complete a delivery, you'll get a reward based on the original mission objective and the amount of Omoi power, i.e. the heart and soul of the package that is in the package when you get there. In addition to how it starts out from the game, you also get more of that or lose some of it based on events in certain battle situations. Also, don't let those monsters that need to be stamped out defeat you, or that will affect your Omoi power. The funny thing about this game is that I shouldn't really enjoy it in certain ways, because and that whole thing about not being able to tell your party members what to do drives me bonkers. It basically drove me nuts about Persona 3, which is why they eventually fixed it for future generations, where you don't have to worry about that, and it would probably bug me here too. However, I also played through the entirety of the original Persona 3 despite that. And there was something about the fact that, as much as it annoyed me that my party members didn't do what the hell I wanted them to do at crucial times, there was something to be said about being able to acknowledge, well, this is one of those games where your party members are their own people, and they're going to do what they want sometimes. You can't make them do it. It adds an extra, albeit annoying, albeit interesting layer to the idea of you don't tell these people what to do. They're just kind of rolling with you, and they'll do what they want to do within reason. And honestly, that's partly what kind of kicked in with this game too. It didn't bug me as much as it should have, or as much as I would have thought it would have, because maybe partly because the penalty for death isn't all that bad. Maybe it's because most of the battles in this game didn't really give me a ton of trouble. Like, you'll be making choices, but you're not going to be pulling your head out for any of the particular skirmishes in this game. It's very easy breezy in that way. And lastly, it might be interesting to me because the characters are hilarious in this game. The character art style is similar to that of Mary Skelter, the Mary Skelter series, if you played any of those games. If you haven't played those games, I don't know where else to tell you to look, but it's Mary Skelter art, and I like the Mary Skelter art. I like the art in this game. Hell, one of the characters, the mage that I mentioned earlier, looks damn near like Hamlin in that game, down to the dual color eyes. Doesn't matter. I still like the characters, and they're hilarious when they interact with each other in the game. There's a knight who's supposed to be, wants to defend people, but she's an extreme coward, and she pisses herself at the sight of a frog. It's very loud and aggressive when it happens. Though, counter to that, they do have voices. The voices are great. But they also speak so damn much and so frequently in battle, you might find yourself occasionally going, I need a break. I'm just going to turn the voices off and then come back later when I want to revive that feeling again of hearing my character go, I only want to fight strong enemies, or whatever she does. But all that is to say that I still think this game is pretty enjoyable. I had fun with it. I like the story. I like the characters. I like the writing, as goofy as it is, probably because it's goofy and it doesn't take itself particularly seriously, even with the weird premise of postal energy. But I enjoyed it. If anything, the only thing I really wish they had done, aside from, tone the voices down, is give you a more convincing method of movement, because a spinner that you just flick, it seems kind of played out in a world where board games have evolved so much, whether they be digital or video, tactile, for controlling movement. There are items you can buy at stores that might let you get a little bit more of a handle on, like, say, force you to roll a two or whatever, but you have limited inventory space. You're not going to be just like packing a stack of twos or whatever. I should also mention, to those who might have been curious, but I didn't mention it, how leveling up works in this game, is that when you fight enemies and kill them on the board, you get experience points. But It's not until you complete a mission and return to the delivery guild that the game in the background tallies up your experience points. And if you hit a certain threshold, your entire unit will level up as a whole, as in your delivery rank will increase. And that usually increases the size of your package, your delivery satchel, and your characters might learn new moves and stats might go up a bit. But that's how experience and leveling
up. I think you've said package so much that I have to.
ASML After Dark.
It's just a lot of package talk in this. Game clocks in at $30 on Switch and PlayStation, hitting Steam later on this year. What are your thoughts on $30 on this?
I give this game a genuine try because I know for a fact there are a lot of people that would get genuinely pissed off at the whole do as they want, not as I say mechanic in the game. But with that said, I mean, I think the game has some potential to it. I think the universe they created is pretty funny. And I think this game might be worth your time. So if you're an Idea Factory fan, this is something that's kind of unique for them.
Unique. Very good. Next up, Fortuna Magus, developed by Worldwide Software, published by Kemco, released March 6th, Xbox One Series and PC, Switch, PS4, PS5, Steam, $19.99. Welcome to the world of Fortuna Magus, a fantasy RPG that offers hours of enjoyment even after the main story ends. In a world where magi are persecuted for their arcane powers, Amane finds himself branded a criminal when he defends Rhett, a vagrant Magus who once helped him. Magus or Magus? Magus? How do they say it in this game? Because they always say.
Well, there's no English voice acting, so fair. I think it's probably
Magus
or Magus. Yeah, Magi.
Forced to flee, can they uncover the truth behind their father's disappearance? Chris, tell us about this one.
All right, well, here we got a Kemco RPG. However, this one is outside of the usual. So, you know, Kemco has a big handful of developers that actually make the games, and, you know, Kemco just publishes. So it's kind of worth it if you're wanting to, you know, dive into these RPGs. To know that, you know, the difference between like X-Create, Hit Point, Magitek. This is actually an even more obscure fourth one called Worldwide Software. The games that they've done that I've reviewed before have been Silver Nornir and Legend of Ixtona. They've also done Symphony of the Origin, Aeon Avenger, but those haven't made their way over here yet. So not a whole lot from them on the Switch or anything so far. But so, yeah, definitely like a different art style you'll notice right away. A lot more line drawing type of sprite work rather than pixelated. That is to say, it doesn't go out of its way to look like it's a throwback, but everything is small and sprite based and, you know, animated within just a few frames. But yeah, you look closely and you'll see it's nice, clean lines, like actually drawn. So nice crack. What are we drinking tonight?
I am opening a Kickstart, a pineapple orange mango, because my tum tum's getting a little upset from the Subway I had earlier. So.
Oh, yeah, that'll happen. Using
the coconut water in there to kind of soothe it a bit. It's been helping me lately.
Subway, eat flesh. Anyway. So, yeah, Fortuna Magus. Basically, yeah, this is, like I said, Worldwide Software. Now, this is going to be, like, you know, like all the rest of them, like X-Create, Hit Point, whatever, a mobile style RPG just simply ported over to the Switch with nothing really added or anything like that. And this one is from like, I'm going to say 12 years ago. So yeah, it's not like got anything like super modern to it. In fact, you know, if you remember my last month's review of a Kemco RPG, I talked about it having seven distinct kinds of like currency for you to collect on top of like your experience points and other stats. This one just has the two. It just has money and points that you can buy things in the special store The special store in this game has no secret super special weapons or anything like that. Nothing to break the game. Merely stuff that makes the game easier in different ways, or raises, like you can do permanent stat raises, but in small increments, and you know, it'll take you a while to collect those. So this really is an RPG that simply asks that you play it and play through the story. The story is pretty good. It's about an adopted son called Amane, and his kind of adopted, I can't tell which of the daughters is, I can't remember which one of them is like adopted and which one is not, but anyway, their father mysteriously disappears many years ago after discovering a mysterious mark on his arm, and they you know, one of them opts to go find him some years later, and so she's out of the picture for the first part of the story, and you know, Amane and the second person whose name I'm already forgetting.
Pia Harat.
Yeah, I think so. Bill? Yeah, Bill.
Will, Kate, Cal, I don't know. I'm just looking at the names on the page here.
Yeah, my in my game, I'm in a battle, so I can't look at the names right now. But yeah. Yeah, let's see here. Anyways, whatever. It's fine. One of them. Go off on an adventure. They discover another character who is a Magus. And what a Magus is in this game is it's basically a person who is born with innate magic casting ability. Magic in this game works a lot like the X-Create games. It's special skills that are elemental based, but also like certain moves are kind of tucked away with the elements. For instance, you know, throwing a fireball is in the fire school, but so is stealing. So if you want to have a thief character, they want to be in the fire element, right? So they meet this guy. Huh?
Because I said makes sense. Because when you get when you get pickpocketed, you're feeling burned.
yeah. See, and what is it like? If something is hot, then it means it's stolen.
Yeah.
So, there you go. So yeah, that's just an example. But anyways, so they discover this guy. He's got innate magic ability and also a weird mark on his arms. And he's like, yeah, I'm a Magus. We're not very popular among people because some of us tend to go crazy and just start attacking people randomly. And this is further illustrated by the convenient battle against a Magus who is coming after you, an unrelated one. Who's coming at you randomly and you have to fight him. So you kind of partner up with this guy who's off searching for answers. You're searching for answers. You think your father might have turned into a Magus, so you've decided that you're going to go follow this guy around and see if that makes you cross paths. Like I said, the story is pretty interesting. The total main story game loop is actually, I haven't done this myself. Okay, this is just through my research that I found this out, but the game is apparently about 10 hours long. It's not a very long RPG. There's not a whole lot of characters, and like
that's
I said,
what I love about the Kemco game. I did what was the last one? Dragon Spear. I think I plowed through that one in about 12.
Yeah, and of course, you know, they got the lunch break RPGs too, like Arch Lion Saga and Everdark Tower, which are an hour and a half each.
I would love to see those come to Xbox. Those sound so fun.
Yeah, they need to come out with more short RPGs. That is nice. But I'm just letting you know, for the sake of review, that this is a short game. And like I said, I don't know what they mean about the gameplay lasting through the main story. I know how that occurs in other video games, but I have to beat this one before that happens, before I find that out. But yeah, it's basically, like I said, a more bare bones presentation. You know, battles are standard turn based. You basically have your, you know, your HP and SP, which is your MP, for using your special skills and your character's own, you know, specific unique abilities.
Unique.
And Yeah, and of course you can get mage stones, which allow you to, like, you know, learn specific spells from the certain elements, except for your magus character, who has all, you know, access to all of them, of course. And, you know, that plays into the story as well. And then you have a TP meter, which is a meter that goes up as you fight, and when it raises all the way, you can then bust out like a nice limit break style skill. And the cool thing is, the more skills you use, at least those are the circumstances I was able to tell, the more you learn. So you may randomly use a skill and end up learning this this whole new skill that you can then use. And that includes new kind of limit break style skills, as well as ones that you can partner up with one of the other teammates and use. And all of these, like, go for, like, you know, a huge amount of damage. So, you know, like I said, the game does not dump a bunch of, like, you know, game-breaking equipment on you or anything, so you learning how to utilize these skills is actually pretty important in this game as you go along to try and, you know, meet the challenge. Of course, the game does also have an easy mode that can be toggled on, so, you know, if you want to just breeze through it, you can do that too. So, yeah, music's good. Like I said, the line drawing is really nice. It's refreshing to be able to look close, like really close, before you actually see any pixels, even though it is, like I said, you know, small sprite-like characters. But, you know, that's if you can tolerate the mobile RPG look, which some people can't. I certainly can. I played, like, 50 of these games now, so.
I love them. I get everyone that comes out. This one clocks in at 20, which seems to be the going rate for Kemco games these days. If you pick it up at least on the Switch in the next week or so, you could get it for 18, so you could save $2. What do you think of this game for 20?
It also has paid DLC for $6 and $3 for, the one that's $3 is a no encounters toggle, which you can actually get within the game using the second currency. The experience boosters, I think, have to be, like, equipped or something like that. But anyways, so yeah, it's not just 18 if you want to buy everything, but yeah, at $18, it's good. I might, you know, if you're looking to get into Kemco RPGs in total, I might recommend a longer game from the series. X Creates a little bit better for that. But yeah, this is a good enough one for sure. And like I said, you know, it's one of the rare worldwide software titles that have actually ended up published on the Switch. So
very good.
Yeah, I give it a buy it.
All right. Next up, we're going to do a quick update on Assassin's Creed Unity. Yes, Unity, developed, published, and provided to us by Ubisoft. Thank you, Ubisoft. Aki, say thank you. Hey, thank you. Okay.
I have to get to where I can unmute my mic. Eat my ass.
It's your review. You should be ready. This one released November 2014 on Xbox One, PS4, and PC. Presently runs $29.99. It just got a 60 frames update March 2026. Yes, 12 years in the making, it gets a 60-frame update. The French Revolution turns a once magnificent city into a place of terror and chaos. Explore the stunning, full-scale, open-world city and witness history unfold. Experience key events from the storming of the Bastille to the execution of King Louis as France's fate is shaped in the streets of a city on the edge of transformation. Aki, I think we all kind of know what the Assassin's Creed games are, so how's... For the people who don't know what this one is, give us the quick rundown and then tell us how this game is performing in the year of our Lord 2026 with this new update. Aki, you're muted.
God damn it. I knew that. I just was making sure you all knew that.
Yep.
And this
one, you want me to edit that or do you want to keep it?
Just keep it. It's all good. And this one you play as Arno. He's French. I'm sorry. And it is set up very much as a multiplayer co-op game rather than just single player. It has its single player part, but it is also very focused on, hey, here's missions in the world. You can replay them as you see fit. And they're anywhere from one person to up to four people can play. And it is set up in order to create your own little group and to go out and play it. The update has actually fixed a lot of things. It runs a lot smoother now, which is nice. Combat's a lot more fluid. which is very appreciated because this is one of the older Assassin's Creed games, and I didn't realize how not great some of those played after playing the new ones so much. Like, you have to be right on top of enemies to assassinate them now, and it's like, damn, I'm so close to these guys. And it's kind of nerve-wracking, because I'm used to just, like, running through, jumping, stabbing them, and running off. And you ain't doing that in this game. And I'm like, oh, wow, it's been a long time since I've played this. Sadly, I did not get to play any multiplayer, because the multiplayer is still fairly dead, realistically. I did see that there were some people who were playing it. Because when you go into your clubhouse, you can look for groups, and I saw some groups that were new. So there are some people playing, they just didn't play with me. You know, that sucks, but it, as is life. So yeah, it's really nice. I've really liked the updates. It's been really cool. And because this is an older game, if you go and start it up, you also get all of the Ubisoft rewards for the game, because it went to the old launcher that was defunct, and you automatically now get anything for all your old games. So that's a real cool plus, because that gives you a whole ton of weapons and stuff that are just extra little fun things to play with. So yeah.
Very good. And performance is good. Everything feels good. Fluid.
Extremely. It's amazing. I sat here... I probably sat there for like 3 or 4 hours replaying the game. I have absolutely nothing left to do in that game. When I quit the game, I had leveled up every single weapon and armor, upgraded everything in it. So I literally went in this thing to do, and I still spent like another 4 hours playing it because it was so good with this update.
All right. Well, $30 on the game. What do you think of it?
Really worth it. It's a great game. However, for people who are thinking of getting it now, there are some discontinued achievements, if that matters to you, because the community stuff is no more. You can still make a community and play missions with each other, but there used to be like weekly things, and those achievements are dead because those don't exist anymore. It's kind of shame they didn't like add some sort of update to just make a constant cycle of that stuff every week. Just be like, here's this, and it just set to automatically do it. That'd be nice, but you know, they can only do what they can do. So
I mean, it's an old game, so
yes, it is.
All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Chicken Knots, developed by Sneaky Box and Couch Key Cave, I think. Published by Untold Tales and Sneaky Box. It released March 5th, Steam Early Access for $5.99. Chicken Knots is a companion-based action roguelike game where you battle evil alien chickens who've abducted your beloved flock. Free and mutate your chickens to defeat a myriad of foes, explore various spaceship environments, and unravel the secrets of the chickens from outer space. Purnell, what in the hell is Chicken Knots?
So, Chicken Knots, for those who are familiar with the genre, the easiest way to describe it is enter the gungeon with a lot less content. If you don't know what that is, then I'm going to explain the game as a whole to you then. This is a top-down run-and-gun shooter where you get to play as a farmer who is trying to rescue his chickens from an alien ship that has crashed down onto Earth and has abducted the chickens that he had. This is done by way of going into the ship firsthand with a pistol and going room to room shooting up the mutated chicken monsters that inhabit the ship. Each time you enter a room, you'll basically be attacked by a variety of different chicken enemies that will spawn up and start attacking you. You can use your right thumbstick to aim and fire at them, using your pistol and up to 3 other weapons that can be unlocked as you play through the game. Eventually, however, you will rescue your first of 3 chicken companions you can have. And when you rescue a chicken, that's when the customization elements of the game really start to kick in, because your chickens are the main stars of the show in this game. they come with their own traits and basic attacks. They follow you around the board and will use those attacks of their own volition. You do not tell them to attack or anything. They do what they want. However, you can use the right thumbs, the right trigger, or sorry, the right bumper to guide them and direct them the way you want them to go. And they'll just kind of walk to where you tell them to go. And if they have an attack that's based on a perimeter of them, that is a good way to send them into a swarm of enemies that they can then engage with their special attack. Each time you clear a room, you'll find yourself getting access to an open door, sometimes one, sometimes two, that can lead to the next upgrade. Sometimes it will lead you to a shop where you can spend money you found to buy healing items or the occasional bauble. Might come across a new attack room. We have to fight another horde of enemies. And every once in a while, you might even come across a little treasure room that might give you a trinket that will give you a passive buff. Eventually, you will die. And when that happens, you have the choice to restart your run or going back to your base camp. And your base camp will eventually become inhabited by four different NPCs that you will rescue on the ship. I'm sorry, five NPCs that you'll rescue on the ship. And they all do different things for you. One, for example, will sell you the aforementioned four weapons that I told you about. Another one will actually let you choose which of your chickens that you rescued of the aforementioned three you want to take on your next run with you. And another one, for example, will give you the ability to kind of spend hard-earned, I guess, egg currency, which is like the currency that you can take outside of your runs to upgrade your character. And there's a few other things, too, that I won't say everything about. But at the same time, that is what is at play here. I feel like, and it might be because I'm coming at this from a history of playing a lot of these games. There are a lot of these games out there where I felt like, for the most part, I'd experienced the majority of what I was going to see in this game within like a good 30 minutes to an hour. Like, I get that it's early access, which is going to likely play into that statement. And I can totally see whether there's room for more interesting stuff. For example, the chicken, the different archetypes, the chickens can be pretty funny. There's like a Jujutsu Kaisen level or joke chicken in here. And there's like a John Wick chicken and like a Mary Poppins chicken. So I can see the humor in them coming up with these crazy chickens. If you ever played the game Broforce, I'm pretty sure they were inspired a bit by that because that game does something similar with their characters. But at this point, I definitely found myself going, I played this a little bit and I kind of feel like I'm done with it. Does that mean that there's going to be more to come? I sure as hell hope so with the whole early access moniker on the corner. And to be fair, the gameplay concept of run and gun is tried and true. I mean, it's not like it's not enjoyable to play. I like running. I like gunning. I like shooting chickens. But it wasn't quite clicking with me in a way because I feel like there's everything I've seen here is like it's not so much been done because that's normal to think. But there's not a lot to look forward to, at least for now, until new content is released. So I feel like more content will make this game a lot better to engage with. Though, in addition to that, one thing I'd like to acknowledge that I wish they would do is one, give me more music. The music is the same across every biome. Please change that. Second thing, I would like for there to be a better indication of what items you're getting when you use the gachapon machine at the store, or occasionally I'll come across an item on the ground that I try to pick it up, and I feel like I'll just get an item or an ability or a perk that I don't know what it is. There's a potion that says gives you random item. It'd be nice if the potion, you know, put the item on the ground and gave you some indicator saying you earn this. Instead, I have to scout all of my stuff and hope I can recognize what's changed because there's no indicator of what item I've acquired or what if I got my health back or whatever, aside from just having to check to see it in the actual item slot.
Which speaking of indicators, I just got an indicator that BX Latino Heat dropped 200 biddies. Latino Heat, thank you so much for the biddies. Appreciate you being here, hanging out. We are just about done chatting about chicken knots. Pernell, do you have any final thoughts on it?
For the most part, I just want to mention that I think the humor in the game is on the right track. I think that with a bit more variety in both the music and the enemy, well, not both, but in the enemy variety, the gun weaponry, and the chickens, I could see some potential here for something to be fun. But, and it might just be me thinking from a bias level, but I've played a lot of these games in the last like 15 years, even more recent ones. And for a game to really click in this environment, there needs to be a fair bit of content to kind of push it along. So I'm rooting for their early access to deliver more content, but for now I'd have to give it a low end try to deny it.
Makes sense. Even at the cheap price, should we wish list this? Keep our eyes on it at least.
Oh, absolutely. At least wish list and keep an eye on it because, again, more content will make this game more appealing. And if the humor stays like it is right now, but add more cool chickens and expand on it, I think this game will totally become something of interest.
Very good. And with that, we are done with this episode. Big thanks to y'all for being here, hanging out the whole time. Big thanks to David Ventura for coming on, keeping us company through the first hour in the show. The game is Tacticord. You can wishlist it on Steam now. And again, you got a few more days to get in on the playtest. For now, you got it on your Steam Deck already, yes, I'm guessing?
Yes, sir. Got it. We're doing the actual episode discussion.
Hell yeah. Music. Since we talked about packages earlier, how about some Paperboy?
Do 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 do. Yes.
Ding ding. At Magfest one time, the 1UPs played it, and I got to ring the bell.
Well, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
Also, I didn't realize someone played that at Magfest. That's respectable.
Yeah, back at the Hilton. Old school.
That explains why something so cool happened because it was during the old school days.
Indeed.
But he still played good stuff days. Now.
Retired USAF dropping biddies as well. We got some biddies in the cup. I believe it's 20, but my eyes are getting bad. Again, that is it for this episode. Thank you again. Chris, give us some final words to end the show.
Some final words to end the show.
Way down in Kokomo.
Sure.